tell me about the woman at the center of this, because she's, I don't even want to start with her. She's a wonderful, no wonder you read, as soon as you found her, you must have just jumped.
Well, for sure. She was 12 years old, working class girl, barely literate, when she found and excavated her first huge marine reptile fossil. There's quite a deposit of Jurassic fossils at Lyme Regis, and she and her father had been collecting little curiosities and selling them, sort of as talisman, when she found this huge creature. And this was 50 years before Darwin, and so no one really had a sense of what these creatures were. There was a lot of folklore about dragons and so on. But she managed to excavate and sell that fossil when she was 12, and from that point on she supported her family by her collecting, and she became probably the most informed self-taught paleontologist of the era.
They didn't even have the term paleontologist.
No.
You were what, an
undergroundologist.
And it's so funny to read, because these are scientists who are weighing and checking, instead of a reference book, they're checking the Bible to see if they're on the right track.
Well, that's right. William Buckland, who's quite prominent in the book, had just established a faculty at Oxford University of undergroundology. It became the geology faculty, but it was Oxford University was very orthodox at the time, and he saw his funding for that faculty as being tied to his orthodoxy, and so he was looking at all of this as the detritus from Noah's flood. And it is amazing to think that these were the men of science of the period.
So he has to put up with religious ignorance and then sexist, I mean.
This was the early 19th century. I don't think she was singled out in particular for any kind of treatment, but probably, I think what ended up happening to her is that she fraternized a lot with the upper class gentlemen who flocked to Lyme Regis to buy her fossils, and she kind of moved a little bit out of her own class, and she ended up somewhat stranded between social classes, which made her life difficult as well.
She's at the beginning of the book selling curiosities, and it took me a minute to figure out what the heck a curiosity was, and then I was like, oh my god, is that what they think they are? So explain what curiosities were thought to be and then what they actually are.
Yes. They were finding, Lyme Regis is extremely rich in all kinds of small fossils, and if you go there you can still pick them up on the beach. So ammonites and belemnites and various small mollusks like that. The people were finding them. They had a lot of folklore about them, that they were belemnites, they thought, appeared everywhere, every place that a lightning bolt struck. They thought that ammonites were curled up snakes. So they were selling, Mary and her father were selling them in the square, and they had various superstitions around how they would benefit your health. Ammonite was, you know, a little bit of an aphrodisiac or whatever. they would carve heads on them and talk about them as snake stones. So there were various fossils that would keep milk from souring and that kind of thing. And they called them curiosities or curios. So the curie man was the man who sold these fossils.
Tell me about Henry, because she comes from the lower class but actually has class, whereas he comes from the upper classes and really doesn't have much at all.
Oh, that's interesting.
Is that a fair way of, because he's kind of in disgrace at the beginning of the book.
Yes, he's thrown out of military college for insubordination. This is something that historically happened to him. Henry de la Beche is the second major character in this book, and I was drawn to him because there are anecdotal accounts that Mary Anning was in love with one of the upper class gentlemen that she worked with, but nobody knows who it was. And so I had the wonderful author's position of being able to choose from these men, looking at them historically, who would be the most interesting to write into that role. And I found him extremely interesting. He was quite a radical thinker in some ways. He used to do satiric cartoons with, you know, talking dinosaurs and this kind of thing. He was a plantation owner. He had a slave worked plantation in Jamaica, and yet he saw himself as a social progressive. So he was a really complicated guy. And I was just interested in imagining what sort of relationship the two of them would have if he, in fact, was the person that she was drawn to.
Have they done anything about rehabilitating her role in things yet? Because that's a glaring omission if it hasn't been done.
Well, yes. Actually, the Royal Society celebrated its 350th anniversary. It was founded in 1660. And as part of the celebration, they released a list of the 10 most influential female scientists in Britain. And Mary Anning was number 3. So she is... she was formally recognized by the Royal Society, which is kind of interesting because, of course, she was never a member.
The book is Curiosity. It's a love story. I've been speaking with the award-winning novelist Joan Thomas and Curiosity, published by McClelland and Stewart.